From WXXI News in Rochester. This is Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson, and our connection this hour is one that you probably make every weekend after you have spent all week listening to serious news people like me bring you down with all of the week's heavy news. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me hits the air on Saturdays to make fun of it all. In addition to Peter Sagal and the host chair and announcer Bill Curtis, Wait Wait's secret sauce is the rotating panel of comedians who read what may or may not be fake news stories and identify real news stories in the lightning round. Four of those comedians are coming to Rochester this weekend for the comics of Wait Wait Don't Tell Me, Saturday night at the Kodak Center. Faith Saley will be here, Harry Kondabolu, and our two guests this hour, Alonzo Bowden. You may know him as the winner of season 3 of Last Comic Standing. Alonzo, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Glad you could be with us.
It is good to be here.
It is good to have you. And Emmy Blotnick is a stand-up and a writer from New York City. She writes for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, among other things. Emmy, welcome to the show. Emmy, you there? We will try to reconnect with Emmy there. Emmy, let us know when we've got you there. We'll start with you, Alonzo. Welcome. Have you performed in Rochester before?
I have. There's a comedy club there that I've done a few times. And I have been on a radio show with a Rochester, I guess, icon.
Brother Weeze. Yep.
Yeah. So I have been at Rochester before. Great city. I prefer it in the summertime. But, you know, we'll see how it does in December.
I got to warn you, we have a little bit of snow, but you are up, if I understand correctly, you're performing in Vermont tomorrow, so you're going to get even more snow than you're going to see here, I think. So you'll be ready for
it. All right, well, I guess that's good to know coming from L.A.
Don't tempt me with that. Don't tempt me with that at all. So let's talk a little bit about Wait Wait. The show has been here in Rochester. I've had the joy of seeing performances of it live on stage here. For my money, I think some of the best parts of the show are the interplay between comics that sometimes never even make air. What is it like to be there as part of that panel with two other really funny people and a really funny host and announcer? What's that experience like?
I love it. I love it. And as you said, when people see the live show, the live recording of the radio show, they get to see everything that was edited out, because we tend to go on and get into topics and have a lot of fun, which is part of the reason the comedy show was created, so that we could do our live comedy without being interrupted by, you know, having to stop for radio and the FCC and NPR, but allowed to just cut loose and be funny.
It is. There are some great moments. I wish there were a podcast that was just all of the moments that are cut out. I would subscribe to that, actually. Emmy Blotnick, do we have you on the line now? We still don't seem to have Emmy. We are going to try to get Emmy on the phone instead as we continue talking.
Wow, this is just like something that would happen on the show.
Exactly.
We have a problem and we gotta go around it.
Difference is we're live here, which is part of the fun of it. We don't get to edit all of this out. How did you make your way onto Wait Wait?
Well, it's one of those situations where it's good to not know what you're walking into. So I believe the producers saw me doing a show in Chicago, a live show, and they asked me to come on as a panelist. And when I first did Wait Wait, I had no idea what it was. I had never listened. My agents just told me it was a panel show about the news and you got to sit in and be funny. And I joked that when I got there, I realized that I only had to be funnier than Tom Baudet to get the job. So I felt good about that. No disrespect to Tom. He's hilarious and a great guy. But yeah, I did the show. I did not realize how big the show was until a few months after I started. Carl Castle was retiring and they were having his retirement party, and they invited me and I couldn't make the party. And after the party, they were telling me like, oh yeah, President Obama sent in a video and Katie Couric was there and Congressperson so-and-so was there. And, you know, Tom Hanks said, happy, congratulate. And I'm just sitting there like, what? Wait a minute, who? I'm like, oh, so this is a thing.
It is, and it's a whole different world, obviously, from this whole touring world of stand-up comedy that that you guys live in. And full disclosure to our audience, the people producing this knew I was going to get into this at some point. I do stand up here in Rochester on obviously a much lower level than you do on Wait Wait, but you know, a guy can dream, right? We are joined now. I believe we do finally have Emmy Blotnick on the phone with us. Emmy, welcome to the show.
You do.
We do.
It finally happened.
Technology. Yay.
Yeah.
So we've got Emmy with us now too. Emmy, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Alonzo. How did you come to the attention of Wait Wait and land this awesome prize of being able to be on the panel?
Oh my goodness. I'm not entirely sure there was like, I wish it had been like I got a golden ticket in the mail or something. I think I know a couple of the producers from like various comedy things, I guess. I don't know if that's a satisfying answer, but it's been so much fun to be part of the show and part of the tour too.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit. And Alonzo had mentioned, obviously, you get to go up there and be uninterrupted. I mean, for people who have seen Wait Wait, the show live here, this is a little different. This is four comics, and you each get to go up. How long are your sets here?
I think they range like 10 to 30 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, from 10 to 30.
Which is, I mean, that's, you know, to keep an audience engaged for that long, I know from experience that's not an easy thing to do. And especially this is, I don't know if you've seen the Kodak Theater here or the layout of it. It's a pretty big room. You're not super close to the audience. What's the difference? I mean, you know, obviously every stand-up has experience being in very small rooms where you got people right on top of you. You can do crowd work. This isn't like that. What's it like to be up on a huge stage like this, trying to make 3,000 people laugh when you can't really see them? Emmy, you go first.
Well, Emmy, I'm going to let you go ahead.
Well, you see, this is why Alonzo does the 30 and I do the 10. Okay, so I really enjoy it. And I feel like, you know, it's always fun to be in like a historic venue like this one where it feels like we should be doing opera or something, and we get to tell jokes about like our weird bowel movements or whatever instead. That's always great. I have been only at smaller comedy clubs in Rochester, but the audiences are always a lot of fun.
It's a good comedy town, Alonzo. You've done big arenas, and what's honestly, I'm just jealous of you guys. What's the experience like?
I wasn't the least bit nervous until you described it.
Oh, good.
Now I have no idea what I'm walking into. You know, it's always fun. I mean, you don't get to connect the way you do in a small club, but you get a much bigger reaction than you would in a small club. So I have fun working theaters, and you know, this will be a historic theater. I'm sure it's a beautiful theater. It'll be a fun show. Yeah, all comics, I think the most fun is an overcrowded small club. I had a friend say one time, the best crowd you can ever get is 175 people in a 125 seat room, which is crazy energy wise. But theater shows can be really fun. You just play a little bigger and you can still talk to the crowd. You just can't do it with the same intimacy as when they're sitting 5 feet away.
Yeah, it definitely makes that whole crowd work thing of picking somebody out to interact with a little bit harder. We are talking with the comics of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, who will be performing here Saturday night in Rochester. Alonzo Bowden and Emmy Blotnick are with us here on Connections. Let's go behind the scenes a little bit on Wait, Wait. You know, I've seen what it looks like sitting in the audience. How far ahead do you know that you've been picked for a specific week? And then what is the process like on your end of preparing material and being ready to go on and be part of this crazy thing that lasts for maybe an hour and a half on stage and turns into a tighter hour for radio?
Well, the thing that most comedians love is not having to prepare. And this show mostly is that. The radio tapings, we know maybe like right before we go out, a couple of the topics we'll talk about. And we've pre-written the Bluff the Listener game. But the rest is riffing and winging it and trying to impress our families.
Yeah, we don't get much advance in the way of material. As far as scheduling, I don't really know how they schedule or how they pick who's going to be on it. Usually they'll call somewhere between 2 weeks and a month in advance and say, are you available on this date or that date to do the show? And then we book the logistics of, you know, traveling and doing the show. Material wise, yeah, we might get what the first topic is right before we walk on stage. We get the Bluff the Listener topic the day before because we have to write the bluffs. And during the Trump era, we would have a talk before the show because there was a one Trump joke per show rule. So they would let you know, but we're not going to make it all about, because obviously that could have been the whole show on any given week. It's funny how the collapse of democracy can give you lots of material. So, yeah, they limited us there. But we have a pretty wide open forum when we're doing the show. That's why they do it early and allow it to be edited out, because between you and me, Emmy, she's just filthy. You can't just let her go. Yeah, it'd really be. You wouldn't be allowed. It'd be FCC-ish, Emma. It's bad.
I have watched a lot of both of your stand-up, and I can testify, yes, this is true. So the Bluff the Listener, you're doing your own writing on that? They don't supply a writer for that? They just give you a topic and say go?
Pretty much. They'll give sort of a loose prompt, right? It'll be like, give us an example of a time someone found $1,000 or something like that. But after that, you've got to put on your newsman hat and try to make it sound like you're reporting on a real thing.
And one of you gets a legitimate story to do too. So that sometimes you get hit with two that you got to write this one up that really happened.
One person gets the real story and two of us have to write fake stories. In my case, I always write the fake story, send it in, and then they rewrite my entire fake story. So. I'm an idea man.
There you go. So we are talking with the comics of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We have Alonzo Bowden with us. We have Emmy Blotnick with us. If you have questions, if you're a Wait, Wait listener and you want to know what happens behind the scenes, if you want to know what they will not tell you about Bill Curtis and his pre-show ritual, give us a call or drop us a line. You can reach us at 800-295-TALK, 800-295-8255, or locally at 263-9994. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that you do. Emmy, you are also a writer. You work with Stephen Colbert on The Late Show. First of all, is he okay? Is he recuperating?
I am no longer a writer there, but I have lots of dear friends there, and it sounds like he's doing all right, thankfully. I hope he recovers quickly.
We miss him. We need his humor. What's that like to go back and forth between? And this is a common thing that obviously a lot of working comics do, to go back and forth between actually performing your own stuff and then having to write something in a completely different voice.
I mean, it's sort of like what Alonzo was saying before. Like in the Trump era, there was just such a deluge of insanity at all times that we would be scrambling to rewrite things before he walked out because, you know, it was such chaos. So I think hopefully the work of monologue writers is a little bit easier on our sanity.
I don't know. I mean, things seem just as crazy now as they were at that point. And that's a show, too. I mean, you know, Alonzo, you were talking about how funny the end of American democracy is. I mean, this is really something that a lot of late night has feasted on for the last few years. Is this, where else can we go at this point as a comedian?
Well, there's always more. I mean, that's the comedian's job, right? I'm a big fan of the court jester, because the jester was the only one who could speak truth to power, But if it wasn't funny, they would chop off his head. So I kind of like the stakes on that. It's a big difference doing wait versus late night, because for one thing, late night TV is much more immediate because you're doing it every day. And they will go, I think they will go a little harder than wait. One of the things that Peter is conscious of, and the producers of wait, it's a break from the heavy news. So we don't go into the really heavy stories, the really depressing stories. We tend to stay on the lighter side, the funnier side. And one of my favorite things is they will always ask at least one question that I have no idea what they're talking about. usually the most fun is when I don't know the answer and we have to find it. Because, you know, those points are very valuable, and, you know, the winning wait, the prizes, the cash and prizes are just, you can't even describe what you get.
Can you try? What is out there awaiting the lucky wait panel winner?
Absolutely nothing would be a good description. You win nothing.
Except the envy of all of your fellow panelists. And I'm guessing, Emmy, also you make your family proud too, right?
The thing about that show, wait in particular, I feel like I get, I have people reaching out from like decades ago that are like, I'm in the car with my whole family and we're laughing. And it's actually the best thing because, you know, it feels like, yeah, it just has such a wide reach. And like Alonzo was saying, it's usually lighter stories, so it's fun to get to talk about like if rats have dreams at night or whatever, instead of like a potential coup or something.
My mother-in-law messaged me I think yesterday and said, "Did you see Wait's coming to Rochester? Are you going?" I'm like, "Am I going? I'm talking to them. Come on, give me some credit here." And my dad, you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say there are always stories that the scientists have studied. I honestly don't know who the wait scientists are and how they get to do these fun and ridiculous studies.
It's fun. I was going to say my dad was a huge fan of the show, and it was such an honor to be able to bring him when they were last here live in Rochester, and he got to meet Peter and meet Bill and chat with them a little bit, and that I think that made him a lot happier than actually hearing me on the radio for some reason. We are talking with Emmy Blotnick and Alonzo Bowden, who are here in Rochester this weekend as part of the comics of Wait, Don't Tell Me. Let's talk about Peter and Bill, because everybody wants to know what are these guys really like behind the scenes. I know, you know, Bill dines out on having this wonderful rich announcer voice and then having so much fun with it. And Peter, I've been following him on social media for years. He's a runner. He is. He's an interesting guy.
For sure. I mean, well, I had to say when I first met Bill, having only heard his voice, the wardrobe matches the voice. I hope that makes sense. But he's a totally dapper gentleman. So it's it really delivers.
I would say that Bill loves going against type. After a long career doing the news and being known for his voice, et cetera, he likes joking around. And he likes saying, when he does the commercial reads and things like that, he throws in his own lines that are totally unexpected and really funny. Whereas Peter is exactly what you would expect from a Harvard comedy writer. He just has that vibe about him. I will say that I couldn't imagine anyone else hosting this show. He is perfect for it. His sense of humor, his timing. And I think my favorite thing about Peter is his generosity allowing us to be funny. He seems to know right where the line is to allow us to joke and then say, okay, now we're going to rein him back in and move on.
What kind of guidance do you get? I mean, we've mentioned that the show does get edited. It's on public radio. There are certain things that we can and can't say. How much guidance do you get about, okay, aside from only one Trump joke per show, where you can and can't go, or is it just try it out and see if it gets cut?
I say try it out and see if it gets cut. I've from the very beginning, I've always felt it's more fun to be funny than to be right. And that's the, again, they have the ability to edit, and you know, you never know where the show is going to go.
Who has been your favorite guest star that you've had on there with you?
For me, it had to have been George Clinton from Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh.
Because there's nothing like hearing Peter Sagal interview George Clinton, knowing at any moment George could just drop the funk and probably lose Peter a little bit. Something about dropping the funk, you just lose Peter Sagal. It was, but it was a fantastic interview, and it was very interesting. But he was definitely my favorite. Also, I love his music. So whenever there's someone who I know of, and they're an idol or somebody I really want to hear from, I enjoy those shows.
Emmy, how about you?
I mean, I wish I'd been on the George Clinton episode. Gosh, I got to do a show where Mariska Hargitay was the guest, and she's an absolute queen. So I was very, very excited to just like sit back and let her listen to her. She's had such an amazing career, and you know, yeah, that was a blast. And recently, John Stamos, who, I mean, he was over the phone, and I was like losing my composure. So
that was just what, 2 weeks ago. It was a great episode.
Yeah, that was recent.
That was a fun one. Yeah, I saw him actually on Cabaret on Broadway a few years ago. Totally unexpected that he was as good as he was, but it has been a long-running joke with my wife that you dragged me to see John Stamos bear his, you know what, on stage in Broadway. I was not up for that. We are talking to the comics of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We should mention also the other two comics who could not join us today, who are going to be on as part of the tour with you. Hari Kondabolu has become a very big name in comedy in the last few years. He's going to be there. And Faith Saley, who is known not only for comedy, but also as a contributor on CBS Sunday Morning. And in fact, that she sent her apologies for not being able to join us because she's taping a segment for Sunday Morning right now and could not be with us. It's an interesting group of people, and I'm guessing that for you as panelists, that you probably get to work with people that you would never get to work with otherwise, right?
That is one of the fun things about this tour, too, is it's a handful of panelists who we may not get to do an actual show together, but we get to, like, play a beautiful theater like the Kodak and hang out and get to know each other a bit.
Do you get a chance?
I'm looking forward to meeting Hari because, like Emmy says, we don't get to work together. I've never met him. I love his comedy, so it's going to be fun to meet him. And Faith has become a great friend from doing the show and doing a podcast about the show with her and doing some other things. Faith is great. So, yeah, it's going to definitely be a fun show. The booking is done well because our comedy is different, right? We're four different voices on stage, which I think always makes a comedy show more interesting than having comics that are similar one after another. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Alonzo and I have totally opposing takes on paper straws, so you'll get to hear that back to back.
We have a company here. We have a company here in Rochester that makes paper straws, Rock Paper Straws, which I think is a great name. So feel free to grab that and go with it.
Wow, you're just going to kiss up to Emmy on that one. You're just going to give her the paper straw win. See, this is what I'm up against. So now I have to go up against the paper straw people, but I'm ready for them.
I'm with you, Alonzo. They get mushy. I can't deal with them.
Don't kiss up, Scott. It doesn't work.
I can try, though, right? What makes, I mean, it feels to me like there's a certain kind of comic that works on Wait, Wait, and probably some comics who would not work at all. I mean, obviously you have to know at least something about what's happening in the news or at least be able to really be funny about not knowing it in some cases. But what do you think is kind of that secret sauce of what makes it work for somebody to be on the show and to be a regular there? I mean, we know some of the names that are very big that are there all the time, the Paula Poundstones, you know, some of the regulars there. What makes that work?
Well, I think you need to be able to obviously work in the moment, right off the cuff, be funny based on what you hear. The other talent, secret sauce, as you put it, is an ability to work on a panel with other comics and not step on them, tag what they use. The tag, by the way, to your audience means taking a joke and then adding another punchline or adding something funny to something someone else said. I think that is the part where they lose some comics, because stand-ups, we work alone. And some stand-ups, when you get into a situation where you have to work with other comics, aren't completely comfortable with it. The other thing is you have to know that it's Paula's show and we're all just guests. I mean, let's not be ridiculous. You better know that coming in.
Yeah, she was on the panel that I saw here, and absolutely, she ran away. It's interesting because I'm looking across the glass here meaningfully at our executive producer of the show, Megan Mack, who is an accomplished performer here too as part of an improv group. And we've had conversations over the years where she's told me, you know, she would never go on stage by herself because she thinks that would be terrifying to do stand-up. But when she's up there with her troupe, Thank You Kiss, which is awesome, by the way, you know, they all do that. They click together. Is doing improv, do you think that helps with that skill set?
I mean,
well, I think
it can't hurt,
help with,
right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Amy.
No. I was going to say, I think there's like, it's not exactly like we're assuming like new characters or whatever, but it's helpful just to keep you on your toes. Like the way improv, you know what I mean, right? I feel like I started a sentence, but it kind of didn't have a destination. Oh, well, I would be terrible in an improv group.
Alonzo, yes and us here. Come on.
Well, I think the similarity to improv is the ability to listen. You have to listen to what the other comics are saying or what Peter's saying and go from that, as opposed to when you're doing stand-up by yourself, you're saying what you want to say. You are the writer, director, and performer. So it is a bit different, but yeah, I think the ability to listen would be the similarity to improv comics. But as Emmy says, we're not creating new characters or completely made up scenarios like improv does, unless we're talking about, you know, the government, which is actually a giant improv troupe. I don't know if you've seen Congress perform. They don't draw numbers, but they can be quite ridiculous.
Indeed. We are talking with the comics of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Emmy Blotnick and Alonzo Bowden. We are going to take our one break of the hour here. We invite you to join us if you'd like at 263-9994 here in Rochester, 844-295-TALK, wherever you may be. And we will be right back as Connections continues.
I'm Evan Dawson, Friday on the next Connections. New York State is having a conversation about when we vote. Is it time to move county elections to even-numbered years so more people will vote? That debate is going to happen Friday in our first hour. In our second hour, Claire Stanford, author of a new novel called Happy For You, an acclaimed novel about happiness. We'll talk about it Friday.
It's Connections from WXXI. I'm Scott Feibusch, sitting in for Evan Dawson this hour, and we are talking with the comics of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, four of the panelists from the show that you listen to every weekend here in WXXI and WEOS. We'll be in Rochester this Saturday at the Kodak Center, and with us are two of them. Alonzo Bowden is here. Emmy Blotnick is here. You might know Alonzo from season 3 of Last Comic Standing. Emmy's credits include writing for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. We are so happy to have you here. So looking forward to having you join us. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about kind of the state of comedy during and post-pandemic. Start with you, Emmy, especially also as a writer. How have you survived not just through the pandemic, but then through the strike these last few months. How's it going?
It's really interesting right now. I feel like it's moved, since the pandemic has moved more towards social media in a weird way, but it doesn't change like the thrill of doing an actual like live show with an audience. I think, you know, I'm not like a big, like I'm not on TikTok. I guess I should be, but I'm not. And I still really just like cherish being in person and having the live connection.
I tried doing some Zoom comedy and I hated it. Oh my God. It was awful.
Oh my God. It's so hard. You sit in the same chair you do everything else in, and you just, you're talking to like I did a Zoom gig where it was like 20 people on mute or with their cameras off. And so I was just kind of like doing jokes to avoid. And yeah, you just close the laptop and you're like, well, I guess I'll go back to melting cheese on a tortilla. And that doesn't feel like doing a comedy show.
And if they're unmuted, you hear everybody's dogs barking and whatever else is going on in the background. And then you know they're not listening. It's not fun, is it? Alonzo, how do you get through the pandemic?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's unfortunately, but fortunately for me, I was actually good at doing Zoom comedy. I figured it out pretty quick. Once they figured out how that we could listen to some of the audience and get the laughter to get the timing, once I figured that out, it was an easy way to make money. Let me tell you something, to not have to get on a plane and not have to deal with the airlines and the airport. I say all the time that they pay me to travel. The jokes are free. The jokes are the easy part. It's the airlines that'll wear you down. So it was, you know, it was creativity. It was like my open mic days where it would be like, okay, Monday afternoon, I got a Zoom show from 1 to 2. Then Tuesday night, we're going to do a rooftop in downtown LA. And then on Thursdays, there's a show at the beach where we do it outside on the sand. I mean, you had to be creative as to where we perform. My favorite pandemic show, we did it outside of behind a weed store in LA. And at the time, gatherings couldn't be more than 35 people with social distancing. We had 50. So the weed was legal and the comedy was illegal. I think that's the only time that's going to happen. So yeah, it was a matter of being creative. After the first few months and when I realized, no, I'm not going to go broke and lose everything I have, then it just became a creative way to hustle and do new comedy venues.
I was very glad that this was not how I was trying to make money during all this. But my wife and I, actually, she's a comic too, and we started a backyard comedy show because there was nowhere else to do it. So we invited people to our backyard and set up some lights. And it's still going every summer during the like 2 months when the weather permits, and we are still having fun with it. Alonzo, you took your pandemic experience and some of your thoughts about anti-vaxxers, and a lot of that got worked into your special last year, Stupid Don't Get Tired. And you're still touring behind that, right?
Yeah, I tour with that special, and I'm a topical comedian. So when you're a topical comedian, the material's constantly changing and evolving. But I had to talk about that because the one thing I still talk about that I think is very weird and ridiculous in our society, and maybe it was already there and the pandemic brought it to the surface, but people just gave up on science. It was a fascinating thing where people just decided that educated, experienced people, scientists and doctors, were suddenly wrong. And it was based on absolutely nothing. It wasn't like they had an opposing view. They just decided that, oh, you've been studying, diseases for the last 40 years. Yeah, no. That was the argument against scientists and doctors. No, we don't like you anymore. So now the earth is flat. We've never been to the moon and vaccines don't work. To which I always ask, has your polio flared up lately? We gave such power to stupidity over the pandemic. You know, getting back to our live and Zoom comedy, I think the audiences enjoyed it because they got tired of watching the same thing on Netflix. So there's only so much Tiger King you can watch before you say, hey, give me something live.
Absolutely. And you, I mean, there's a risk probably that you run in losing some potential audience members. But on the other hand, I'm guessing you probably don't care.
Well, listen, we're going to lose the anti-vaxxers sooner or later, and I don't mind that being sooner. So not too worried about them. And the flat earthers have never really been my demographic. So, yeah, I'm willing to roll the dice on those groups.
Emmy, how about you? Are you, as you're out there, what's it like as a touring comic these days? Where are things that you can go to in your set? Are there things that you shy away from still?
I don't feel like I'm shying away from much of anything. I guess it's I don't know. I feel like I've been I have felt people like very energized to be out and just like, yeah. That's usually like enough of a bonding force. It's just like, yay, we all went out.
How do you make a go of it? I mean, are you supporting yourself at this point more with writing than with stand up, vice versa? How do you make a go of this? It's a tough business out there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously at the Writers Guild strike, I was left to my own devices for a few months there. But prior to the strike, it had been like, it felt like quite a boom of shows, and I was very fortunate to be able to like go from staff to staff on different, like, you know, not like the long running late night type things, but more like newer, maybe more niche things, some animated things, some sitcoms. Like, it's been fun to bounce around and be with different groups of writers too. And I think that'll all be kind of back up and running in no time. So, you know, it's always a juggle. It's a juggle of like, you know, touring on weekends, sometimes doing a regular like 9-to-5 type job, and hopefully flying to the Studebaker Theater in Chicago for wait as often as possible,
or wherever else they may happen to be on the road any given week.
That's right.
Just to mix things up, we are talking about Wait, Don't Tell Me. We're talking with the comics of Wait, Emmy Blotnick and Alonzo Bowden will be here this weekend, along with Harry Kondabalu and Faith Saley on stage at the Kodak Center. We touched very briefly, Emmy, you mentioned TikTok earlier. How do you get the word out? I mean, there are so many comics who are out there looking for attention. Everybody has, you know, videos that are up and clips that are up, and a lot of people are doing TikTok. How do you navigate this incredibly splintered world of social media right now and get the word out about what you're doing and get people to want to come see you?
That is a great question. I should probably be, it can be a whole job just like marketing and promoting your stuff online, but I try to focus the energy more on the work itself, like the comedy part of it, and hope that if it's funny enough, people will come out. But since you asked, should I plug my Pacific Northwest
yes.
state? I feel like you've got Rochester listeners, but I am doing 3 shows we got Helium in Portland, Oregon on the 6th, Hereafter in Seattle on the 7th, and the Majestic Theater in Corvallis, Oregon on the 8th. What are the odds your listeners would go that far to see me?
You never know who's streaming us from where. We've got listeners all over the place. It could happen. Alonzo, how about you?
Well, what you touched on, I mean, if anyone knew the secret of creating a viral video, they'd be a billionaire. Every network, everybody would pay them. I just put the content out there. I'm fortunate to have a really good social media person I work with now, and she cuts up clips. We put it out there. Some of them catch on and people watch. Some of them, they don't. People, you hope they go down the rabbit hole and enjoy watching your videos and then want to actually see you live There is, you know, so many people. I mean, there's so many ways to catch on, right? The whether people are watching train wrecks or cat videos or dog videos, or, you know, it probably helps to be really good looking. That seems to catch on in clips, being ridiculously sexy. See, I missed out on both of those, so that one didn't work for me. I think it's just a matter of putting content out there. And if people like it and it catches on, and, you know, it's like that old thing, right? They told two friends and they told two friends. And then before you know it, you have a couple of million views and people want to come see you live. I also find in a lot of ways it's generational, because the younger people who tend to go out more like to see the younger comics, you know, comics of their generation. I think that helps. But yeah, it's just a new way of promoting. I mean, it used to be radio. It used to be fun to go into a city a couple of days early, do the radio stations and build an audience. And now it seems to be social media. The problem with social media is you may have 10 million followers and then find out 9 million of them are in the UK, which really makes it hard for me to sell comics at Mohegan Sun next weekend.
Or worse, they're bots from Russia. Which happens too. Let's go to the phones here at 844-295-TALK. Rachel is out on the New York State Thruway. How's the driving, Rachel?
I'm off it now, and I apologize in advance for my Bluetooth because it's usually horrible.
We can hear you.
Oh, good. I've got tickets for this weekend. I'm really excited to attend. I've also seen Paula Poundstone. But I'm looking forward to meeting all these guys because you are such an antidote for me and cheaper than wine, and I don't get a hangover. So I appreciate that. And I look forward to Wait, Don't Tell Me every weekend when you guys are part of the panels and Peter Sagal. And I do miss Carl Castle, though. He's fondly remembered. So indeed. It'll be, I'm looking forward to this Saturday. I've been waiting. And you managed to hit Rochester when the weather's decent, so glad to have you here.
Can we settle for decent-ish? Can we take ish?
Yeah, well.
For the beginning of December.
Indeed. It's actually 50 degrees right now, so.
And the sun is out.
Not bad.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and the sun is out, so.
Awesome. Rachel, thanks for the call. We're looking forward. I'll be there Saturday, too. Looking forward to seeing you.
All right. Find you guys.
All right. So you have a fan base that is here and ready to see you. Alonzo, you had mentioned kind of the you know, younger people wanting to see younger comics. As a 51-year-old guy, I feel that kind of acutely. The audience, I'm going to guess, that we'll see on Saturday is probably a little bit on the older side. Are they ready for some of the non-radio stuff, non-radio-friendly stuff that you guys are going to be bringing them?
Well, I like to call this audience grown folks, even though we'll always have every show we've done, every show I've been part of, there have been some kids at the show, which I just attribute to really bad parenting. I will say, when we joke about what's not on the radio, it's not a matter of language and a bunch of cursing and this and that. It's more not being guided. In the sense, when we're doing the live show, we're guided by the questions. Our funny is based on what Peter asks us and the topics that they choose for the show. Whereas when we do our own stand-up, we're choosing the topics and we're talking about whatever we want to talk about. So I think that is, although there we do lose the language restriction, it's not like suddenly, wait, you know, XXX-rated, wait, don't tell me. It's not like that. So to your listeners, don't be afraid of that happening. It's more just topics that we talk about aren't dictated by the show.
You also, and you touch on this somewhat, Alonzo, in your special, you talk a little bit about Dave Chappelle. You talk a little bit about cancel culture. You know, you are somebody who does not want to feel limited in any way by what topics you can pick when you're up there picking topics on your own, right?
Oh, would I love to be canceled. If I were canceled, the Kodak Theater would be sold out just based on my name. the cancel culture to me is in the comedy world is such an overrated thing, because the people who sit back and judge, they're the armchair quarterbacks of comedy. They listen to a clip the next day, they read something a comic said, and they're, oh my gosh, it's terrible. Fortunately, audiences still come to the show. They still bring a sense of humor. And when you see comedy done live in context, there are a lot of things that are very funny that won't be funny when you read them on a page or you see this clip taken fully out of context, designed to enrage you. You know, so no, I only want the cancel culture for the publicity. Whenever Dave gets canceled, I see 10 million views. You asked about getting views on social media. Get a joke canceled and watch how much people look for it on social media. Oh, if you know anybody who could cancel me, please, if you can cancel me between now and Saturday, I would appreciate it.
We will do our best. Emmy, what are your thoughts on that topic?
I'm with Alonzo on this one. I feel like it is really overblown. And most of the time, like, it's also a little bit like what you were saying before, Alonzo, about the court jester. It's the off with his head if it's not funny. That's usually what gets people upset, is that, like, maybe the joke doesn't hold up to much scrutiny or whatever, and it's if it were funny, we wouldn't be upset. That's usually what's happening, I feel like. But people love to have something to fume about, and there's lots of swings and misses that are part of doing comedy. So I don't know.
Yeah, it feels to me, you know, from having taken stabs at it myself, there's that line between just doing it to be obnoxious and maybe doing something that has some thought behind it. Even if it does fall flat, I'd rather go in that direction, right, than just get up there and just shock people for the sake of it.
Right.
Well, if you do it strictly for shock value, that wears off.
Yeah.
There has to be something behind the shock value. It shock value will fool them for a little while, and then they start listening, and they're like, but wait, there's no punchline. There's nothing funny about what you're saying. You're just using words to shock people. Well, you can't do that. That's not sustainable. So, and that happens sometimes when you know, one of the things social media has created is the one-bit wonder, where someone has a really funny clip on social media, but when they're doing live comedy, they don't have anything else. Just like back in the day when you had the hit song on the radio and your whole concert was leading up to playing that song. So
I have some fan mail for Alonzo here from Maureen via email. Alonzo, I am a 73-year-old woman who would love to hear your voice reading me bedtime stories. Your voice is so soothing. So there's that.
Well, she just has to win a game on wait, and there I am on her voicemail forever.
Have either of you had the chance to do voicemails for listeners yet?
I've done a few of them. I think
I'll
Bill,
come clean and say
I would
that
say
I
it's
haven't.
Probably.
I don't know. Is my voice not soothing? I guess I'll work on it.
I think Bill is the first and Paula is the second when it comes to doing voicemails, and the rest of us are a distant third.
Yeah, cards on the table. If I ever won, I would pick Bill too. But that's just me. We are in our final moments.
Bill
here.
Bill actually chose me, so I'm very honored by
really?
That. I am the
what
voice.
What a flex. Oh, my
voice.
God.
Ooh, that's exciting. Alonzo Bowden is with us. Emmy Blotnick is with us. In our final couple of minutes, what I'm imagining, even, you know, at the relatively elevated levels of comedy that you're at, what's the dream that you haven't achieved yet? What would be kind of the pinnacle of doing comedy for each of you? Alonzo, go first.
Wow. Stand-up wise?
Yeah.
Probably the White House Correspondents' Dinner. That would be the ultimate gig. My buddy Roy Wood Jr., I mean, just killed it this year. I think that's the gig, the golden ring that I'd like to reach.
Emmy, how about you?
Oh, man, it's such a hard question. White House Correspondents' Dinner is definitely up there. I feel like, oh my God, I don't. If they cast Jewish people in the next Elf, I'll take it. I guess I think it'd be cool to host that show. Is it Cake? They didn't reach out to me, but here I am expressing interest.
There you go. That would be fun.
My dream of the Kodak Theater in Rochester is about to be achieved.
Well, there you go. I hope.
Oh, heck yeah.
I hope it lives up to expectations. Hopefully you get here in time to enjoy some of our local cuisine, grab a garbage plate or something along the way in. And do you try to do a couple of jokes that are tailored to the community when you come in?
Oh, I love doing that. That is something I miss, local newspapers. Mm. That used to be my first thing when I went to a city, is read the paper and see what they're talking about locally and find something to tag them with.
Pander to us.
I am going to try to get a garbage plate in for sure.
Awesome. Let me know. I'll show you the best places. We have been talking with Alonzo Bowden and Emmy Blotnick, living my personal dream of being panelists on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. They will be here in Rochester at the Kodak Center on Saturday. I'm Scott Feibusch. You have been listening to Connections. Our thanks to executive producer Megan Mack, Julie Williams, Rob Braden, and our whole team here. Evan will be back tomorrow with more Connections. Thanks for being with us.